drivers to be waiting, and that is where they are even in that lot where they're waiting in period two. So there's no functional period one.
If they don't have a ride, they're not in period two.
That's actually incorrect. So period one and period two are slightly different in that there is no match request connected. But in period one and two, there is no passenger in the vehicle.
If they're sitting waiting in the... I don't even understand what I'm being...
Yeah, I would be happy to share that information with you at a later point.
Just like me, when I pick up a relative at the airport, we go to the cell phone waiting lot and we're waiting, and then you get the text that your relative is there and I take off there. They're sitting in that lot. They don't have a ride. They don't have a connection. They're not in period two. They're in period one.
According to our airport permits, and because people are there for commercial purposes, they are in period two.
Which means they're covered by the higher amount. But right. So, do you keep data? Do your companies keep data nationally on the frequency of accidents in period one, two, and three? If I were to ask you to tell me the pie chart in the accidents, that, and you are required under this agreement to provide us data on crashes, so I'm assuming you track this. So let's start with Uber. As between periods 1, 2, and 3, what percentage of the accidents that involve your drivers occur in period 1?
I personally do not have access to that information. However, we do regularly report that with the City of Portland, like you said, on an ongoing basis.
Well, that's
I'd be happy to provide the...
So, Annabelle, what you probably have a better sense of the national data. What's in period one, period two, period three? What's the percentage of accidents that occur in period one?
So, I don't know percentages, but what I can say, and as you've noted just now, is that according to the pilot and according to the final draft regulations here that we're looking at, the city would be collecting all sorts of accident data, and that would allow it to be specific to the City of Portland rather than broader.
I get this, but look, it shouldn't be this difficult. National data for Lyft. Do the accidents that are reported by Lyft to whatever body reflect that the most accidents occur in period one, period two, or period three?
So I don't know that information off the top of my head.
Well, let me ask you a hypothetical. Let's assume most of the accidents occur in period one.
Mm-hmm.
Why would it be reasonable and appropriate to provide lower insurance coverage in period one than for period two and three if the majority of accidents occur in period one?
Right. So I would go back to what we were discussing earlier about the greater insurance questions being addressed nationally and have been addressed. The very function and design of period one is different, and that is why those limits were chosen. And I understand that we may have a philosophical disagreement on that point, but that has been the standard adopted by the majority of states.
No, but the mayor's point goes beyond a philosophical disagreement. The mayor's essentially asked you, what beyond your determination of reasonable and appropriate and beyond a philosophical disagreement, what is the barrier, the actual barrier to you providing it? It's not that the insurance market doesn't provide it. You have a philosophical disagreement. You're willing to pull out of jurisdictions that mandate it. So what is the primary problem with it? Is it cost?
I think it's a multitude of factors combined together.
I'll take one.
Right. I think it is partially cost, absolutely. I think it's partially that it is an unreasonable amount to be put on a period one. I mean, there has been there has been so much discussion on this. And so I just want to be very clear that...
I know, but isn't the first question, what's the amount of injury that occurs in period one? Shouldn't that be the starting point of our discussion? Is there a greater risk to the public in period one? That's a question I'd like answered independent of where we land.
Right.
Well, I can't believe the insurance industry can't help us out with this. I was once a contractor. I had to provide $1 million umbrella coverage in case, you know, when I painted somebody's house, the paint peeled mm-hmm. off. The premium was quite low because the actual risk to my customers was nominal. You know, I might have screwed up at a scale of $1,000 or $10,000.
You can also raise the deductible to further reduce your
payment. So the odds that they ever would have to pay $1 million claim were so low that the cost of coverage was quite low. And that was based on actuarial data of how many claims got filed. Wow. So I can't believe that there's no one walking around, whether it's you as executives of these companies or insurance people who could come in here after months of having this long debate and tell us, as Mr. Entler just alleged, he pulled a number out, and I think he probably stands by it, that 65% of accidents occur in period one. That's his position.
Well, so well if I
can
may.
We get some, can we, you mean we can't get any data until we start collecting it ourselves?
Well, if I may, Mayor, I think that you hit the point on the head, which is actuarial data. And in this case, the city of Portland actually is uniquely situated to have huge amounts of data from the pilot period. And I think the question to the council, as well as the Portland Bureau of Transportation, is has the current insurance limits been working? And I think that the data report clearly indicates that they have.
Well, let me ask you this. If 6 months from now we find out that 65% of the accidents that occur in our community happen in period one, and we determine that the current limits are inadequate, are you prepared to agree to lift the limits?
I think that would be a great discussion if there is, in fact, the data to address that.
But it's probably a great discussion, but from your history, what you're probably likely to do is to pull out and then have some either recourse to the legislature or have some kind of social media campaign to sort of soften our resolve. But what I don't hear is an unequivocal commitment to doing the right thing if the data supports it.
We absolutely have an unequivocal commitment to do the right thing if the data supports it. Absolutely.
All right, so
I just want to be very clear on that, because I think at this point you have the data.
I think what you're also hearing both to our friends at Uber and Lyft, that we'd like to see in writing the national data. So you have experience working in lots of jurisdictions. What percentage of accidents that you handle occur in period one, period two, and period three? In the aggregate, just national data. I'm guessing someone can pull that up on a laptop. Just in relative terms, period one, period two, period three, what percentage of the accidents that you cover in insurance occur in each of those periods? And I think that would be helpful to us in determining whether we think it is reasonable and appropriate to provide a lower level of coverage in period one.
And I'd also like to see from whoever would like to provide them, whether it's the Bureau or the TNCs or anyone else, some case studies about catastrophic claims, because that's what we fear. Mr. Kafouri articulated that fear. Because I'm the police commissioner, I get these notices of tragedy and mayhem in the middle of the night. And a while ago in our city, a drunk ran over two lovely young women on the sidewalk and killed them. Now, we put that guy in jail because that's a crime. And that's some recompense for the loss, but not much. And so what we are fearing and what is driving us on the insurance issue is subjecting people to the risk of a catastrophic accident without mandated coverage. So you've both been operating in enough cities long enough that I fear it's true that something like that has happened. I'd like to know what happened afterwards. So if someone could provide that case study data, don't tell me there hasn't been a single loss of life incident yet involving a TNC somewhere in the world. Let's see some case study data about what happened to the victims of those accidents. And that will help inform our willingness to be the first city to do this, apparently, or maybe we won't because maybe you'll leave the market, or to feel more comfortable about being in the mainstream. But I'm really getting tired of talking around this issue, given the scale of your enterprises, the number of cities that you're operating in, and the fact that, I mean, I was kind of, it was revelatory to me that Mr. Entler said there have already been four accidents involving TNCs in his cabs. So, I mean, that's a relatively small sample, but there's already four cases right there. So I guess we're going to hear from folks in the, you know, in the insurance bar here tonight or whenever we get around to it. But I need to get less theoretical and more down to cases on what has happened to buttress my willingness to either go in the direction that Mr. Kafouri says, if you should be responsible by requiring more coverage, or know that it apparently isn't necessary.
Mr. Bennett, Ms. Chang, I need to confess to an unfortunate oversight on my part. It actually had been my intention that it was the TNCs that are responsible for maintaining insurance in periods 1, 2, and 3. So I am going to propose an amendment to delete the TNC driver or a combination of the two language.
Second.
If I may just clarify that point. So in respect to periods 1, 2, and 3, there was something that was misinterpreted, which was the either-or component. So if you read through the final draft language, it very clearly says that the city has to have proof that those insurance levels are being met at those times. So,
yes, but it says coverage is to be maintained by the TNC, TNC driver, or a combination of the two. And I'm saying that it's going to be coverage is maintained by the TNC, period.
And so you are eliminating the option for the TNC driver to provide that coverage?
No, not at all. Yeah,
we are eliminating the option of the TNCs avoiding paying for that coverage by putting it on the driver.
It's TNC is free to contract with the driver to provide contingent coverage, but that's your business, not ours. We would be ensuring that the claimant has a clean shot at getting primary coverage from the TNC, which is more likely to be the solvent and responsible party.
Do you want to act on that amendment now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll take a roll call on that amendment.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay. Other questions or other points that you two would like to raise before we move on? Thank you. Please get
Thank
back
you.
To us with that case study information.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. What's next, Commissioner?
I think that... that now we move to public testimony, unless staff thinks there's some issues that we need to clarify.
I think there are probably some citizens who would still like to speak,
right,
given how long they've had to wait. So let's let them do that, at least some of them, please.
We're going to do 3 and 3. The
yes.
First three from the support side are Sarah Conti, Chad Lehman, and Laura Brown.
Are they still here? Let's call the next three on that side if they come down from upstairs.
How about Nate Lewitz Packer or Pucker, Clyde Showalter, J.R. Storm, Water Stormont.
Keep going.
Muhammad Ali.
Keep going. One more.
Denise Roche. Some people might be coming down.
Okay, let's take these two gentlemen, and then we got the third person. Come on up. Okay,
Laura.
There you are. Good. All right, we've convened a panel. Thank you for waiting. Please.
My name is Muhammad Ali. Actually, I've been Uber driver since October last year, and it's almost 1 year. So here my testimony. I've been working for Uber 4 years, and I never had a chance to pick up my kid from the school or drop them to the school. But since Uber came in, I had a chance to drop my kid at the school and pick them from school. And I had a chance to meet different corner of the Borland, different people, and the beauty of the old Borland. So on my experience, since I've been working Uber, I had that all experience for it. That's my testimony.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Very much. Welcome.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, my name is Nat Parker. I'm the CEO of Globe Sherpa. We're the local company that built the mobile payment app for TriMet and for Portland Streetcar. I'm here to support the ordinance and encourage you to do the same. Broadly speaking, we're seeing a huge change in how people get around. Shared use mobility is really being impacted by a flight to the cities, by how big the city here is growing, how quickly, in the shared economy. And, you know, we were lucky and fortunate to benefit from mobile technology to increase how TriMet is able to basically sell its fares. The reason I wanted to get up here today is to really encourage you to support the growth of TNCs in the city, not because I see them as competitive to our classic transportation uses today, but complementary. And specifically, the first and the last mile that we talk about in transit anyway, we see as a real challenge that these companies can help fill. So people who take the MAX to Gresham Transit Center, who go out to Hillsborough, what are they going to do to get that last three-quarters of a mile to their house, or even to Intel, to Jones Farm? And these companies offer a really interesting and very flexible option to not just be one source of a ride, but to be a complementary fit to the core of transit. They're also doing a heck of a job of getting people out of single-occupancy vehicles, which should be all of our goal, and it should be your goal at the city level. So I think that we should really look at this as an opportunity. Clearly, there are measures of equity. Clearly, there are measures of safety that I have every confidence you will figure out and make sure are there. But let's also not forget that classic transportation and taxi providers have their own mobile applications that can provide similar solutions. Look at Flywheel. Look at Curb. I can hail a taxi myself using a mobile application. So I think that we want to look at the technology as a leveling influence here and really look at the value that these companies bring. I'll just finish up by saying we are actually working with Lyft and working with TriMet to pioneer a new feature within the TriMet mobile ticketing application, which exists today. You'll be able to, in fact, click on other rides, and you'll be able to hail a Lyft or a Cartigo from directly within the city's mobile ticketing app for transit. So connecting those modes is one way I think we can really offer increased mobility and shared use mobility.
Thank you.
I just have a question about, you raised that they're not single occupancy vehicles. Well, the only reason they're not a single occupancy vehicle is because somebody else is doing the driving. They're still making a single occupancy trip. Do we have any data about how many people rideshare have two or more people in Ubers and Lyfts?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Lyft Line, for example, this notion of carpooling beyond just a single individual in a Lyft vehicle is not only growing rapidly, it's extremely cost competitive. So I think that, to your point, certainly it is single occupancy vehicle, but we're seeing now a propensity of consumers to actually want to share the ride and have that social experience on top of it. It's cheaper, it's more interesting, and it works for the city.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Hi, my name's Denise Roach, and I'm an Uber driver, and I've been doing it since June 12th. I've had nothing but positive feedback from other drivers, the riders, and I like to drive late at night. I've picked up so many people who accidentally missed their last bus, or they missed their last max ride, or their car broke down, or they were stranded somewhere, and I'm there within 2 minutes, and a young woman on the side of the road who maybe got left outside a club, you know, calling a taxi can sometimes take a very long time. And I think that there's a need for the immediacy and drivers out at all hours. And again, I've had nothing but positive feedback. And as far as the insurance, I'm not really, I don't really understand this period one with the commercial liability on the part of Uber. Because when I turn it on, I might be driving to the Moda Center to see if I can, you know, if people need rides after, say, a Blazers game. But even though it's on to see if I get another ride, I haven't been requested by anyone, and there's no one else in the car. So that would be between myself and another driver if there was an accident. I'm not sure I understand why I would need the additional insurance during period one.
How much private insurance do you have?
I have above the max because I'm an Uber driver. So, I mean, I don't remember all the amounts, but, you know, it's more than the state of Oregon requires.
And do you think that your private insurance would cover you if you were on the way to the Motor Center with your app on?
There's no one in the car. I haven't accepted a ride yet, so it's just me as an independent driver at that point.
I
mean, that's how
you
I feel.
You might want to check on that because I think that's maybe not the case.
Thank you very much. Excellent. Thank you all.
The next three are Ray Miles, Noah Ernst, and William Daniels.
Okay. One up. Come on up.
Who else?
You had three, Ray and
Noah, William. How about John or Jim Kennedy? Is Jim here?
Okay, Ray, you're on first.
All right. Good evening. My name is Ray Miles, and I'm the president of Broadway Cab. And I come this afternoon with concerns with two specific areas of the proposed code. I will say I think these are to some extent can be more of a gender issue, so I urge you to listen to me and I urge you to listen to Commissioner Fritz and at least make some assumption that we do represent half the population. Maybe not all of them, but a lot of them. And some of the other half. Anyways, I digress. My concerns are background checks. The best background check available is a biometric fingerprint background check. The International Association of Taxicab Regulators, of which I am not a member, but the City of Portland is a member, has said that is the gold standard for background checks. I think there's been a lot of marketing that would lead you to believe that TNC drivers are soccer moms. It isn't true. I think if you just observe the people here, the news coverage, everything, TNC drivers come from across all socioeconomic strata, and they need to be vetted. They need to be back in check. The other issue I have problems with is vehicle signage. I'm alarmed at this trend that we just pull, you know, that anybody can pull up in a personal car and say, I'm your Uber driver, and you jump in and go. I think vehicle signage would go a long way to helping with this. I think the current code allows too many opportunities for predatory behavior. We saw an example of that here last week. I'd like to see signage on the side of the vehicles because that's where people climb in and out. I'd like to see large magnetic signs that would be more of an investment for somebody to try and masquerade as one of these TNC operators. You know, when this first hit last year, almost a year ago, I also sit on the board of the Taxicab Livery and Paratransit Association of America. It's an international association, and I happened to be at a board meeting, and they said, oh, no, Uber just announced they're coming to Portland, whether Portland allows it or not. And I said, well, you know, I have no doubt Uber eventually will come to Portland. I have no doubt of that. But I do believe we'll handle it better. I do believe it'll be different than it was in other cities.
Ms. Miles?
Yes.
Just to clarify, we're requiring signage on the front and back. You're just saying it should be on the sides as well.
And bigger. And they shouldn't be able to pop it in and out. I mean, they said that's the advantage. I think for insurance, for public safety, that's the disadvantage. You shouldn't be able to pop it in and out. People should know this is a commercial vehicle.
So could you go back to the background check issue for me? And that is, what do you think we should do differently than is in the proposed ordinance now?
I believe every city should and eventually will require a biometric fingerprint background check that is completed by either a third party hired by the city, you know, that's administered by the city or by city staff. I think that's where this industry will head. And in fact, these fingerprint stores are popping up everywhere because they're, it helps you get pre-checked. It helps you. There's one out by our office now where you go in, you take a number, and you get fingerprinted. So I would just say, like I said, I thought, no, Portland will be a different deal. I absolutely believe Portland will be a different deal, and I'm still very hopeful that that will be the case. In New York City, Columbus, Ohio, and Houston, they do fingerprint background checks. In Germany, they're required to have large-scale signage on the side of their cars. And at the Port of Portland, at the airport, they carry $1 million of liability insurance regardless of the phase. And, yes, they are just sitting in a holding lot waiting for a fare. They are in period one. You know, I love Portland. It's the best city I know. And all I'm asking you guys to do is rather than pick and choose which of these, we should require, let's make them do the very best they can, the very best they do in other cities. Let's make them do all of it here. The citizens of Portland deserve that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome. Go ahead, please.
Hello, my name is Ed Herinks. I'm a resident of Portland, and I'm the owner of HMH Agency. And I'm here today to comment specifically on the fee structure that's proposed in the latest code revision. First, I think there's an important clarification of terms that needs to be stated here. Let's call it what it is. It's a tax. It's not a surcharge. An easy comparison would be to liken this to a room tax. Just like a room tax, it's paid by the user. Second, it's a regressive tax. It's charged equally to all consumers, regardless of their income. A large portion of taxi users are low income, and they cannot afford private transportation. So this tax hits them even harder. Third, this represents a huge cost shift from the transportation companies to the consumers. And I would ask you please to listen carefully to this. Whereas historically the cost of operating the Portland Bureau of Transportation has been funded by the companies, now the expense lands squarely on the consumers.
Sir,
I have to interrupt. Don't the companies recover all the costs they have from consumers?
Well, there's a wrinkle in this approach. And if I could just extend my remarks momentarily, I'll come back to that question, if I may.
It's a yes or no question.
All companies will collect the fee and will pay it back to the city, correct?
But currently, don't the companies ultimately have to recover all the cost of fees assessed against them from customers? Because all of their money comes from customers.
That's correct. Yes. Okay. But I'd like to add this. By adding this tax to each ride, and this is what is critically important, I've not heard it discussed anywhere up to this point, it will net a massive windfall for the TNC industry. Their model is to take a 20% commission. In some markets, it's been argued that it's up to 30% on gross receipts. By shifting to a per-ride tax, Uber now will take a 20% cut of the new higher total. Think about this. Using PBOT's data from the month of August alone, TNCs were averaging 8,000 daily rides. With a tax of 50 cents a ride, that generates $4,000 a day, or $4,000 of revenue. 4,000 times 365 days is $1,460,000. By taking that total times Uber's 20% cut, the company will net an extra $292,000 in profit. At the same time, Uber completely dodges the expense that would be assessed if using a per-vehicle fee. It's brilliantly underhanded. Uber totally avoids the direct expense, shifts 100% of the cost to the consumer, and gets nearly $300,000 in additional profit in the meantime. And when you add in a surcharge for Wave, they're going to take 20% of that cut too. If I were one of the TNCs, I'd line up all day long saying, go ahead, add those taxes or surcharges, because I'm going to get 20% of the gross. I don't know that anybody's really dug into this and taken a look at it. So,
isn't it equally true that the taxis, which the companies, which will no longer have to pay the permit fees directly, will be avoiding that cost, assuming your logic?
The taxis will incur some of the same costs. That is correct. And they're not necessarily avoiding it. But what's happening
And what percentage of total taxi profits do taxi cab companies take as opposed to drivers?
I don't have the answer to that. But I would just encourage the city, if you would, to reconsider the idea of returning to a vehicle permit fee. The city will have all the money it needs to administer the program, paid for by the transportation providers, while not creating a new consumer tax that creates a windfall for the TNCs. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner, is the testifier correct that the 50 cents and then the wave fee that Uber and Lyft would take their cut of, their 20% of that?
Well, that depends on the contracts between Uber and their drivers. So, I mean, it's that just like the way the taxi cabs distribute costs and benefits between them and their drivers is up to them.
All right, we'll get an answer to that. That's a good question. Let's go ahead and hear from you, sir.
Good evening, Council. My name is Jim Kennedy. I'm a lifetime Portland resident. I'm a family business owner of Consolidated Business Machines here in Portland. I've been in my chair since 1979, which predates ADA and many other accessible issues and policies. So I'm here to comment today on the WAVE code revisions proposed by Commissioner Novak. I'll begin by saying I think it's a very positive step forward. There's much to like about the proposal before you today. I especially applaud the service performance standard expectations for all private for hire transportation providers. With a must response time of 30 minutes or less, 24/7 citywide. Speaking from my personal experience, this would be a huge improvement on current services. If I have a worry, it's this. Will these new performance standards really be enforced? If they are, the providers will step up, and those of us who depend heavily on WAVE service will be much better served. If, however, if they're not, I'm worried there'll be very little change. Please don't stop short of getting this right. The community of people with disability who face daily mobility challenges are depending on you. I'm asking you to make code enforcement a priority. Please be certain that there is adequate funding to ensure robust enforcement and compliance. Put some teeth into it with some consequences for all providers who don't meet the standards, including fines, suspensions of their operating permits, or revocation of their permits. Hire a bulldog or a pack of bulldogs to monitor and enforce these policies. My concern is well placed. Recent PVOT data from the trial period shows that wave service from the new transportation companies actually decreased 70% during the course of the pilot program, from 188 rides in May to 53 rides in August. To me, this is a huge red flag. To me, it signals that WAVE customers simply quit requesting rides from Uber and Lyft because they consistently didn't have the service available. This is not acceptable. If this is allowed to go uncontested, WAVE customers will once again be left on the curb. If you haven't already, I'd encourage you to look at the alternate code revisions provided by the Transportation Fairness Alliance. It is well constructed and has clearly enforceable performance standards, and it is a better solution. Portland WAVE customers have had to endure challenges for many years in getting responsive, reliable for higher transportation services. This is our chance to really get it right. The code revision proposed by the Transportation Fairness Alliance is a good start. But if all of it is net just words on paper, it amounts to nothing. So enforcement and compliance to guarantee transportation providers are delivering on the service standard is the key. Please ensure that funds, staffing, and training are in place to really follow through. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that I share your concern that it is possible that people who need WAVE vehicles found they couldn't get access when the pilot started and therefore stopped requesting it. And that's why I think we need to make a concerted effort to educate the public that they are required to provide WAVE service. And as I said before, it's my intention to impose penalties on Uber and Lyft for the beginning of the pilot, during which they clearly did not provide WAVE service. And I actually kind of hope that will get some publicity and make it clear to people who need WAVE service that, yes, those entities are required to provide such service.
If I may just add, a WAVE vehicle can be used for any kind of transportation. It's not unique to accessible trips. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thanks very much.
Next three are Sarah Conti, and is Chad Lehman here? No, thank you. We'll go. Is Laura Brown? Laura Brown. Then we'll go with I think I may have called Clyde Showalter. You here? Then what about J.R. Stormont? But Tez Sidise.
Okay, there you go. You've got three now. Thank you. Good evening.
Hi, I'm Sarah Conti. I'm co-founder of an early stage tech company here, and I'm also a board member of the Tech Association of Oregon. Excuse the catch in my voice. I'm here to, first of all, support the work that you have done and that the task force has done for the city of Portland to not only support innovation but also regulation in our city. So thank you all very much for that. The data that I have found the most compelling in the report has been that the market overall has grown by 40%. That to me says that things are working. Demand is up, supply is up, and anecdotally and also entirely the data shows that people want this service and that they are willing to get out of their car and share a ride. So the combination of Uber, the combination of Lyft, taxi cab, drivers has meant that overall in Portland, the wait times have reduced or rides. It also means that the availability has gone up or air transportation. And that has encouraged people, again, to get out of their cars, solve for a lot of people that last mile problem, and really rely on new transportation methods. So in summary, I do, was that my time?
That's okay, go ahead, finish.
Okay, in summary, I just would like to support the regulations that are in front of the commission right now as a balance between that innovation and regulation.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good evening. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is J.R. Stormont. I'm co-founder of a software company in Portland called Cloudability. We employ about just under 50 people. I travel a lot, and I've been using TNCs all over the country for a couple years. In fact, I've taken about 200 rides in TNCs over the last couple years. At home in Portland, I use TNCs now at least 15 times a month. Thanks to the arrival of TNCs this year, my wife and I actually decided not to get a second car because it made that form of transportation that much more reliable and cost-effective. I used to try and take taxis this way. To be frank, the experience between the TNCs and the taxis is light years apart. With taxis, which I formerly took 5 to 10 times a month, I've been left stranded when a promised ride never showed up. There was little accountability. And I live way out in East Portland, way out at 101st. It's hard to get a taxi out there. In one case, I was trying to get a ride home from downtown one night, and a taxi driver refused to take me home because he didn't want to go that far into East Portland. So TNCs have actually enabled me to spend more time with my family because they arrive quickly. This morning, I took one to work. I knew when they're going to arrive. I was able to play with my kids until it actually arrived and knew it would be there on time. They've also let me work on the way to meetings and not to worry about the point of getting out of the taxi when I have to pay with a credit card machine that sometimes doesn't work, all taken care of with the TNC. They've also made the experience just dramatically easier. As a company, we actually pay for late-night rides home for our employees using TNCs if they've worked late or they've had drinks. This makes it really easy. They can request the car. It's billed directly to us, and they don't have to wait on the curb wondering if a taxi is going to show up. They know exactly where it is. And we work right downtown near Pioneer Square. This is important. They can stay in the office. On the note of safety and the point earlier with signage, the TNCs show the driver's the license plate. They show a photo, and they track the driver. That is not something that happens with the taxis. The data is all collected, so I don't think the signage really needs to be out there because I can always check the license plate. So across the 200 TNC rides I've taken, I've only had two experiences that rated less than 4 stars. And when I gave that feedback into the system, it went into a system that actually automatically removes drivers if they drop below feedback levels, which means my feedback actually has impact. Every time I've driven a taxi, or every time I've asked a TNC driver how they like driving the TNCs, the response has been overwhelmingly positive. Sometimes it's a student, sometimes it's a retired person trying to get extra income. It's been a liberating job for those folks. So, you know, I definitely support the changes here that are proposed, specifically because I think the country has been used to having these options. When people come to visit Portland, they use it, and the locals alike really have been able to expand their options. So I wholeheartedly encourage and support these changes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dear Mayor and Commissioners, my name is Taz Siddiq. I am actually an Uber partner for last 17 months. I started in Eugene back in July of 2014. I have completed nearly 4,000 trips for Uber without any incidents at all. Safety is always the number one priority. We have talked about Uber Wave a lot. I'm actually a Wave driver. So I have just happened to be today before on my way here. My last ride was a Wave ride. A gentleman from Cincinnati, and he was at the Hotel Ramada Inn. I picked him up, dropped him off at the downtown, and he was just so thrilled and shocked and pleased that we had Wave available here. He didn't know that we had Wave here. And I showed up within 2 minutes, and he said, wow, nobody ever picked me up that quick. And it was pretty reasonably cheap. And another story about Wave, that about 2 weeks ago, I picked up a really wonderful elderly woman at a Walmart with 6 sacks of grocery on Powell Boulevard, and she requested Wave, and I picked her up, and I showed up within like 4 minutes, and I dropped her off at her house, and I actually carried all the grocery sacks to her house. She said that she didn't expect that kind of service from Uber Wave people. And, you know, it's just, I come from a family that I have, my mom passed away after she's on wheelchair for 7 years. So it's not about just drop them off and just go goodbye. You have to stay with them and show them that you care, compassionate about the whole service. And then also, I'm also on top of Wave, I'm also an Uber Assist driver. So I also pick up blind people with a service dog with them. I happen to drop somebody regularly, her daughter, her name is Jennifer, 37th and Sandy, her daughter goes to school. I drop her off and I pick her up also and drop them off at their house. So at the concluding statement, I just want to say that the best thing, Uber is the best thing happened to me. It's not all about money and everything. And if it was the money, I wouldn't just go for $5-7 ride for the Uber Assist and, you know, Uber Wave. I could have stayed at the airport and pick up the long rides. It's just a compassionate and care that you care about, because you need to let them know that you care about people, not about the financial part of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
The next three are Noah Ernst, William Daniels, and John Backoffner.
Okay, got all three. Good evening. Go ahead.
Hello, my name is Noah Ernst, and before I get to my prepared testimony, I would like to answer a question that you posed to an Uber and Lyft, which they declined to answer. We know what happens in period one when a catastrophic accident occurs with an Uber driver. We know that because in San Francisco, a six-year-old girl was run over and killed by an Uber driver in period one. And how did Uber respond? They denied all liability and fought them in court for over a year before they settled the case in an amount that, of course, cannot be disclosed and does not admit any liability on the part of Uber. That's what they do in period one when there is not enough coverage. The second thing I would like to discuss, I think, are two statements that were made that have summed up this entire process for those of us who are not part of the TNC community. The first is, once again, Mr. Novak starts a presentation about transportation in Portland by saying, Uber has intentionally violated our laws, but this time they promise not to do it, and they really won't. They broke our laws the first time, intentionally. They broke our laws with Waze, intentionally. You can see why there might be some cynicism from those of us not in a TNC about whether there is actually any teeth to anything the City Council says. The final thing before I begin my prepared statement is Uber, and this sums up the whole process, I think a lot of people here will agree, Uber got to thank city staff for working closely with them to prepare these proposed regulations. You've read news articles about how impossible it was for everybody else to get contact with city staff. I believe that you will find that every taxi company, town car company, and other non-TNC company will agree that they cannot thank city staff for working closely with them. And these regulations reflect that. What we have here, and this is my prepared statement, Uber, the company that came into Portland breaking the law, was given exactly the regulations that it wanted and nothing that it doesn't. These Uber-friendly regulations were then applied to the other for-hire companies, even when doing so creates a nonsensical result. For instance, taxi drivers in these regulations are required to have personal auto insurance. Why? With the regulations require, and we all know that taxis have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, commercial insurance. Additionally, taxi drivers cannot get insurance on taxi vehicles they do not own. Additionally, even if they could get insurance on taxi vehicles they don't own, they can't get personal insurance on them. Why? It's a commercial vehicle. What this regulation does in the city that has passed numerous rules encouraging people to get out of their personal cars and into public transportation and onto their bicycles is it puts every single taxi driver who doesn't own a personal vehicle and therefore does not have personal auto insurance out of work for no reason at all. And it shows you how little consideration was given in these drafting of these regulations to how they would impact the other companies other than Uber. I wish I had time to describe all these types of problems that are in these regulations, all of which could have been avoided if the input of anybody other than Uber had been considered. But I haven't got time, so I'm going to follow up on what Ms. Ray Miles said and talk about background checks.
Okay, talk quickly because you have used your time.
Okay, I'm sorry. All I want to say is for decades, over at least since the 50s, Portland has had a system by which drivers are permitted, the background checks are performed by the city of Portland, and their identities are verified by the city of Portland. Now the rules have been changed so that the background check that Uber and Lyft currently does is acceptable. That is completely worthless. To quote the district attorney for San Francisco, background checks that don't include fingerprints, that can't be tied to the right person, and therefore can't be secure. At the end of the day, you cannot have a comprehensive background check if the information you have obtained has nothing to do with the person that you are signing on to be a driver. It is completely worthless. Completely worthless should not be the standard for Portland, Oregon. It just shouldn't.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is John Bockhoffner. I'm an attorney whose practice focused primarily on representing insurance companies and their insureds on coverage and personal injury claims. Hello, Commissioner Fish. I have initially reviewed this proposal and identified several different problems that I thought related to the insurance coverage aspect. After providing my observations voluntarily earlier today, I was asked to testify at this hearing on behalf of the Transportation Fairness Alliance. From my perspective, the most important aspect of this legislation is to provide protection to the general public. My focus is on the inconsistencies in the insurance provisions appearing at pages 11 to 12 and 32 to 34 in Exhibit A. Beyond the inconsistencies between the insurance requirements for taxis and TNCs, which the gentleman next to me addressed, there appear to be practical inconsistencies in the application. I applaud the change that was made at Commissioner Novick's suggestion to bring some parity in that. Thank you. One problem is that most personal insurance auto policies will exclude coverage for a vehicle used to carry persons for a fee. There will not be coverage under the personal policies in most situations. I spoke with some insurer clients, and I am told of situations where TNC drivers withhold information about their status unless asked directly. This raises a significant question about some objectively a verifiable identifier or database where drivers could be identified more easily, so the insurance companies would not have to do a lot of investigation. Another issue is the illusory concept of two primary insurance coverages or the tiered approach of periods, the first of which contains a significantly reduced amount of coverage. The use of periods with reduced coverage, if I may just finish this thought, during period one would provide less coverage when there is the highest risk of a problem. We've heard the testimony from many people that within 4 minutes, they're able to pick drivers up. Within 2 minutes, just a few moments ago, there's only one way that that occurs. They have an app open, and they are typically either driving a vehicle or they are stopped somewhere, but I suspect they're driving a vehicle because they are close to the location. And that requires them to glance at a mobile device while they're driving, which is a significant risk to the public. Why in the world would we want to have a lower insurance limit where there's the riskiest part of driving? That makes no sense to me.
And sir, do you agree with us that the way to determine whether it in fact is the riskiest period is just to look at the data and see whether that's the period of time in which the largest number of accidents occur and claims are asserted?
I think that's a very good way to find out, but I don't know if that's the best way, because anecdotally at least, I'm told that there are problems with people not being identified. I'm told anecdotally that the Uber drivers are instructed not to identify themselves as Uber drivers initially following an accident. I don't know if that's true. That's what I was told by at least one insurance company representative.
We've had testimony here in prior hearings that there might be some difficulty in the marketplace obtaining insurance for period one at the limits that we've been requesting. Based on your professional experience, would it be more likely that the insurance companies would not offer it if it turns out it was the highest risk period and therefore less economical, or that it was a period of time in which very little happened and therefore what? I mean, I never understood the argument as to why if it was a lower risk period, there wouldn't be a plentiful availability of insurance at higher limits.
And I'm in complete agreement with you. Insurance is essentially the business of trying to predict risk and then assessing a premium associated with that risk. First of all, I don't agree that insurance would be unavailable. If you're willing to pay the fee, there is going to be insurance available. It's a question of cost. And I think we saw earlier the response to very direct questions that were responded to by the Lyft and Uber representatives by dancing around the question. Absolutely, cost is the reason why they don't want this. But in my experience, a $1 million umbrella policy is not that much more than a $250,000, $500,000 policy.
Unless it turns out that the period of time that you want to cover has the greatest risk.
Absolutely. And if it does have the greatest risk, that's why we need to have the higher protection for our citizens.
Let's put it slightly differently. If we determine, based on objective data, that it does present the highest risk, and we allow a company to offer lower insurance, then we can hardly say that we have protected public health and safety.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
If I could just interject one thing.
Well,
there's nothing that prevents Uber from self-insuring during that period if they cannot provide coverage. And additionally, your comment earlier is correct. The victim doesn't care.
I understand. We're going to give you the chance to testify. And then, unfortunately, for some of you who've been waiting, we are going to have to discontinue our hearing for this evening and continue it to another time. And that's because the Fire Bureau has reserved this room tonight at 6:30, and I don't like to argue with people that carry sharp axes. So so unfortunately, we will have to continue hearing, I think, to the 18th, but we'll get back to that in a moment. First, we want to hear from you. So,
my name is William Daniels. I drive with Radio Cab. So, Mayor, Commissioners, thanks for being here. If your intent with this proposal was to eliminate approximately 1,000 full-time jobs and chop them up into part-time work, you did it brilliantly. This will do it. If your intent was to appease multinational, destructive, and deceptive companies, this proposal does it. If your intent was to take business away from local companies and give it to multinational companies, this proposal does it. If your intent was to take away business from small companies and give it to giant companies, this proposal does it. If your intent was to be a problem for people in this community and businesses in this community, this proposal does it. Mayor Hales, a couple of months ago, you were in Rome working with the Pope Francis on issues of climate change and human trafficking. Pope Francis has spoken out quite often and quite clearly on the issue of economic justice. So, for example, on May 16th of 2013, he said, "While the income of a minority is increasing exponentially, that of the majority is crumbling. This imbalance results from ideologies which uphold the absolute autonomy of markets and financial speculation, and thus deny the right of control to states which are themselves charged with providing for the common good, the good of all of us." On May 21st, he said, "Rampant capitalism has taught the logic of profit at all costs, of giving to get, of exploitation without looking at the person. And we see the results in the crisis we are experiencing. This home is a place that teaches charity, a school of charity, which instructs me to go encounter every person, not for profit, but for love." And on June 5th, he said, "Man is not in charge today. Money is in charge. Money rules. God our Father did not give the task of caring for the earth to money, but to us. To men and women, we have this task. Instead, men and women are sacrificed to the idol of profit.
I want to thank you and stop you there, because for one thing, we are out of time, and for another, I can't imagine a better last word for a hearing than the Pope, so thank you. but we are going to continue the hearing. Is that to the 18th? Is that right? Is
That's what we've currently got on the schedule.
Well, Mayor, one thing I'm going to ask is, let's set a tentative date, but we had an unfortunate experience this week of 5 or 6 extremely substantive, complex matters all cascading together on our schedule.
I'm concerned about
and
that.
And I think we're at risk of shortchanging the public by doing that. So if we could set a tentative date and then call a meeting of execs to scrub the calendar for the rest of December so we avoid that scenario again. So and I'd be prepared to come for a night hearing if necessary.
Yeah, I would too.
But it's not sustainable, the schedule we currently have.
I totally agree. Where do we stand now on the 18th?
If you're looking for a time certain, I don't have any extra time in either the Wednesday or Thursday afternoon sessions.
Well, the problem with adding it to the 18th is we have a time certain on your resolution. And I'm going to object to putting two matters of that significance in the same afternoon schedule.
Yeah. It's pretty booked for time certains. The next one I have is the afternoon of the 25th at 2 p.m. is the next available.
That's
the day before Thanksgiving.
That's not a good choice. All right, so then I'm going to continue the hearing, and folks, you'll just have to check back with us and find out when we're going to schedule it, because I think your suggestion is a good one. I don't want to nail that right here and crowd it in. So we're going to find a date when we can make sure the calendar is clear enough that the council can hear the remaining folks that want to testify. So again, our apologies that you're not going to get to testify today, but we'll set another date for that soon and put it in the calendar by early next week.
And just to clarify, those who signed up, we would call you in order.
Yes.
And we'll work with representatives from all sides, because in this particular instance, doing an evening hearing might be more problematic, because that's when a lot of these folks earn their living.
Yeah,
so we'll
find a time, and maybe it will go from afternoon to evening. So thank you all. We're adjourned for this week.
Thanks.
Okay.